Welcome, everybody. Episode number 44, Nerds United, JitteryMonkey.com, the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. I am Greg Mahochko. And if this is your first visit to the Nerd Dome, welcome. And I think you picked a tremendous episode to jump on the proverbial bandwagon and go with us on this journey through fandom. Yeah, why not? That seems like a perfectly logical and acceptable word, but we have, I'm going to say, it's going to sound, I don't know, 1950s, 1960s of me, but we have a doozy of a show for you. Before I get to bringing out my guest, bringing him out like he's here, he's not, and I'm not keeping him in a box, even if he would be here. Probably be hanging out on the couch, getting ready to watch some Daredevil, which is what I'm watching on Netflix. And if you haven't yet, you probably should. Now, I'm only 8 episodes in, but each one is just compelling me to watch, you know, click the next one. So I've got 5 episodes left, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 13 episodes in the Netflix original Daredevil series, the first of the Defenders stories, I guess, that we'll see on Netflix, because aka Jessica Jones is on the way, Power Man and Iron Fist. Now the question is, will they, or where will they fit in when we get to like the Civil War, Marvel Civil War, which will be, or Captain America Civil War I should say, which is coming out in, is that a 2017 or 2018? It's all running together anymore, so I don't know. So many movies coming out that I'm just so excited to see, and obviously, you know, that's right up there. I love the Civil War story. If you have not read the Civil War story, there are an abundance of tie-ins. I've read the entire thing, and anything that came under a Civil War, banner, I've read it. I don't think you need to read all of those, but I definitely recommend reading Road to Civil War and Civil War, and beyond that, I mean, you can go as far down to the, you know, as far down the proverbial rabbit hole as you like, but I definitely recommend you reading at least those two and go from there. So, Daredevil, if you haven't watched it yet, check it out. Of course, Age of Ultron is in theaters right now, and I'm working in talks with a former guest and actor and, you know, kind of film guy to get with him and another one of his film buddies. If you remember last fall, the Four Color Eulogy episode, the independent film from some St. Louis filmmakers, and if you remember that episode, I'll be visiting with Jason. At least that's the plan. We'll get together with Jason and another one of the Four Color Eulogy crew, Nick, and we'll talk all about Age of Ultron, the technical side of it. Just kind of, I don't want to say pick it apart, but, and you, don't worry, this is a couple weeks away, so you've got time yet. We'll try to give it as much air to breathe, you know, so we don't want to do spoilers. I just about dropped a spoiler today on Facebook just to be a turd, and I didn't do it, but the thought was really there. It was about, and see, I can't even do it. It's my own show. I can't bring myself to spoil it for you. If you haven't seen Age of Ultron yet, you should. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. Went with my wife and a couple friends of ours this past Friday evening, and just enjoyed. And that's what it's all about. For me, I try not to overthink things. I just go to enjoy the show. And while I was there, got a preview for Jurassic World. Got a preview for, I believe we got a preview for Star Wars Episode 7, I think. But also got the same, you know, teaser trailer for Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice that we've seen before. And that, I'll tell you what, we've got just under 11 months before that one comes out. I'll be there. I'll be there opening weekend, just like I was with Marvel Agents. I was there opening weekend for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I was there opening night to watch it on television with so many others, just to see how well they tied it in with the cinematic universe, the television universe, etc. But no, I'll be there opening weekend for Batman v Superman, just like I was for Avengers Age of Ultron, and so many others. We've got Ant-Man coming up in a few months. We have Fantastic Four, which, you know, the trailer for that. And I'll say this, I am not nearly as down on Fantastic Four as, you know, a lot of people are, a lot of the internet critics. So I think Fantastic Four is going to be, I think it will, this is, I don't know if this is helping Fantastic Four and you know, their case, but a lot of people are already poo-pooing on it and, you know, not expecting much. But I do think that it will exceed expectations. I've raised the bar a little bit. I'll check it out. I think it's going to be decent. I think it'll be better than previous incarnations of Fantastic Four. Take that as you will. Ant-Man, I think, is going to be stupendous. I really like how they're explaining that, and will continue to explain that, you know, in the movie itself. So a lot of, I've said it before, and I'll say it at least a couple more times while I'm, you know, through the course of, you know, recording, editing, producing, publishing the Nerds United podcast over however long it lasts. But this is, I don't want to say this is our time, but, this, you know, I think Kevin Smith said it best when he said, and the geek shall inherit the earth. This is our time. I mean, we're at a pinnacle, you know, of society and I think relevance. So we'll just hang out, have a good time, and take it as long as they'll give it to us. I'm always itching. I think once Hollywood realized the money train that was, you know, comic book franchises, I think that we'll see these in perpetuity. Might not be the same actors, obviously. I mean, people, we're seeing that in the X-Men universe. We're seeing that, obviously, Spider-Man universe. We are seeing that in Daredevil. You know, actors change. You know, and it makes sense. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is not going to play Tony Stark when he's 80. In fact, his contract, I think, his last one's supposed to be the Civil War. So who knows what the future holds for the Iron Man character. I do know that, you know, War Machine is back. And, you know, it's kind of nice seeing some of those sidekicks. I don't want to say sidekicks. That diminishes their value. But, and this, I don't think this is a spoiler, because I think you can see this in any, you know, in the right clips, you know, go here and there. You'll see Anthony Mackie, you'll see Don Cheadle, you'll see those characters, you know, Sam Wilson James Rhodes, you know, respectively. You'll see them in Avengers Age of Ultron, so I don't think that's a spoiler. Hope not. Like I said, try to do a spoiler-free show here at Nerds United. Before I go further, obviously want to I want to dive right in and get to my guest this week, but I feel, because I'm recording this little intro part on Tuesday night after watching The Flash, I feel like I'd be remiss, and this is a pretty Marvel heavy episode, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge all the great stuff that Warner Brothers, DC Warner Brothers Television is doing from a Flash, Arrow standpoint. We heard a little bit in John Wesley Shipp's panel. I think the name has been leaked now for the Atom and Firestorm crossover. You know, the Legends, I think, is what he called it, DC Legends. So they're doing some good stuff. Flash tonight was really our first solid look at Gorilla Grodd, and you know, like the way they're heading with that direction, there appears to be a pretty strong connection between Grodd and Harrison Wells, a.k.a. Eobard Thawne, a.k.a. Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom, however you want to put it. So, a lot of good stuff there. Some interesting happenings as well in the personal life of Barry Allen. So, if you're not watching The Flash, you need to. Same with The Arrow. And this is last week's episode, so I hope it's not a spoiler when I say that Oliver Queen is the heir to the demon. I guess he'll be the next Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, depending on how you pronounce that. But good stuff there. Gotham is, as they approach the end of their first season, it's picking up a little bit. And the one I haven't heard from since its season finale a few months back, and I really hope that just means that they're in production. I haven't heard one way or the other, but really hoping for a second season of Constantine on NBC. Take to social media. Use the hashtag Constantine on Facebook or Twitter if you like the show. If you didn't see the show, I think it's one that comic fans would really enjoy. I think the actor Matt Ryan, and I've said this before in previous episodes, Matt Ryan is the John Constantine. If they ever do a Justice League Dark movie, which I think is in the works, Matt Ryan better play John Constantine. Basic things there. Real quick, before we get to my guest, just want to remind you that if you are looking for a way to help out the Nerds United podcast, you can go to jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunited go to jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunitedpodcast. I forgot I had to add the podcast on there. Go down to the bottom after you read the little bio, the "Hi, I'm Greg, and I do this, and I love it, and I do." See that Amazon badge? Just click that Amazon badge. It'll take you to the regular, everyday Amazon.com that you're used to. But if you make a purchase through that badge, Amazon good enough to kick a little bit and help support the show. We're partners. I help them. They help me. I'm trying to figure out the best, most appropriate way to put it. So anyway, if you do any Amazon shopping, I invite you, encourage you, and beg and plead you to use the Amazon.com link from jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunitedpodcast. And again, you can find that with this link. And you could also, don't forget, if you might be listening on iTunes, you might be listening on Stitcher, you might be listening from the website. We are on iTunes, Stitcher, and of course the website, so check out Nerds United, the podcast. Just search in your, favorite podcast gatherer. I don't know. I'm an iTunes guy. I'm an Apple guy. This is where half of you leave and the other half rejoice, and I'm sorry, but no, I am. I'm an iTunes guy, and punch in, I don't listen to my own podcast. Is that weird? But I always, I subscribe to the feed just to make sure everything works properly. So anyway, check that out, iTunes, Stitcher, and of course jitterymonkey.com for not just Nerds United, but my 1-2-3 cents, gamer, pop culture, a seat above the stands, and if you are in the South Central Illinois region, high school sports, baseball, softball, football in the fall, and basketball, all that fun stuff. So we're getting big on that, and that's all I have. Now, without any further ado, because we've had 14 minutes of ado, and you're sick and tired of ado, and you want to get to the good stuff. So honored. I think at one point I used the term gush. I got to stop gushing or I'm gushing. No. So honored, so thrilled, purely excited, beaming, and overjoyed to have on episode number 44, the King of Rock himself, DMC, Daryl McDaniels.
Comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble!
Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and all to episode 44 of Nerds United. I am very honored to have my guest on the show at this time. I remember it was a Monday afternoon in early March, and I was spending my lunch break at home, as I do every day, you know, check on the dogs and let them out, feed them and such, grab a sandwich, sit down, watch a little bit of television. Happened to be that I was watching the previous night's Comic Book Men, AMC's Comic Book Men. If you don't watch it, you should be. It's what I tend to do. I go to bed early on Sundays. I don't know why. So I get caught up on Monday at lunch break. Seems like on this season of the show, AMC's Comic Book Men, the Secret Stash is visited frequently by celebrities. And this particular episode was no exception. Now, this individual is larger than life, a legend in the music industry, and as we would come to learn, a lifelong comic book fan. Last October, he debuted his comic book in his hometown at the New York Comic Con, the con which, based on attendance alone, larger than the International Comic Con in San Diego. No stranger to some of the largest stages in the world, he is a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. He has his own, I gotta call it label, I know it's not the right term, publishing company, but label just seems to fit, and it's Daryl Makes Comics, DMC of Run DMC, Mr. Daryl McDaniels. D, thank you so much for taking some time to visit with me and be a guest on the show.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and privilege to be here with one of my fellow nerds.
That's right.
You know, this is the place to be. If my name is DMC and a place to be, I know places to be, and Nerds United is one of the places to be. So that's why I'm here.
I appreciate it so much. We were just, you know, talking here briefly before we started running the tape, but so overwhelmed with gratitude that you would find some time in your schedule. We tried getting this going a couple weeks ago, and you're like, can't do it. The Rangers are playing first game
right,
of the playoffs.
So
you know, some things happen as I'm a big believer, and I've said it, and it doesn't matter. You know, what's going on. Family comes first. So, you know, things
right.
like that have to happen. Family, you know, things came up. And life gets in the way sometimes. But, Dee, I'm so grateful, again, that you're able to visit with us and talk about
right.
you as a comic book fan and
uh-huh.
as a comic book creator. I mean, that's I'm hitting my target interview audience right here, at being fan and creator both. So again, thank you
right.
very much.
But thank you. I mean, you know, when I first put the comic out, there was a lot of people that wasn't shocked, but it was almost, no, people were shocked. They was like, what? Why in the world is he doing? And one of the things I want the world to know is I didn't do the comic book because I'm a rapper that had a hit record. You know, these rappers nowadays, they get a hit record. They think they could do everything. Now, that being said, you know, before hip-hop came over the bridge from the Bronx, New York, before the DJs and the MCs and the breakdancing and the graffiti and the Shell Toe Adidas and the Gazelles and the Kangols and the little gold chains before they were dookie ropes and before tape recorders before they turned into boombox. Before hip-hop changed my life, I was a die-hard comic book fiend. It started probably around when I was 5 years old. My brother, who was 3 years older than me, I think he brought a Batman home. And then a couple of weeks later, he started bringing all these Marvel comic books home, the Hulk, Spider-Man, Captain America. And what I used to do is I started drawing stick figures. And a lot of artists in the game now, famous and present artists now, said, D, we all started the same way. You start with the stick figures, and then you take tracing paper. We used to go to the Five and Dime store and buy tracing paper. And what I used to do was I used to trace the covers of all my brother's comic books. When I was like 7 or 8 years old, I realized I didn't need the tracing paper no more. So then I started buying my own comic books. And me and my brother, we had this huge collection of Marvel comic books. And I think the reason why Marvel was so appealing to me was, I'm a little kid. I live in Hollis, Queens, New York, which is a lower middle class suburb of New York City. Now, I went to Catholic school my whole life. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I was one of those kids that couldn't go nowhere. I was one of those kids that when that street light come on, you have your butt in this house.
Been there, done that.
So, yeah, of course. We all did. But Marvel Comics, here's the truth. Marvel Comics showed me actual places in New York City that I heard about, but I couldn't go. I first saw the Roosevelt Island tram in Spider-Man. I first saw Central Park in The Avengers. The Empire State Building, the World Trade Center, Park Avenue. DC was cool. Batman was cool. Superman, Justice League, The Flash was one of my favorites to draw. But the reason why Marvel appealed to me so much was it showed New York. Gotham and Metropolis are fictional, but Marvel really showed New York, and that was my existence as a kid. Straight-A student, 5 and 6 stars on the forehead, Catholic school, the whole uniform, getting bullied and picked on, because the public school kids was crazy. They really thought this. They saw my uniform and my knapsack that said St. Pascal Baylon, so mm-hmm. automatically they was like, your mother and father rich because they pay for you to go to school, run it. So I got my, you know, I got teased for wearing glasses. Come here, Four Eyes. Give me your lunch money. I got my 75-cent taken weekly.
Oh, man.
But when I made it back home, you know, going to school was horrible and trying to make it. I hated when school ended because that means I had to walk the 7 blocks back home. But when I got home, that world of comic books, man, it empowered me. It gave me courage. It took me to a world where I was powerful and everything was okay.
The Marvel aspect, the fact that it's a tangible universe, it takes place, I don't want to say it takes place in you know, our reality. Obviously,
right,
it doesn't.
Right.
But you can go and you can physically go to places that are in the Marvel universe versus
right.
I'll tell you this, though, with the exception of Metropolis. I don't know if you've ever heard of Metropolis, Illinois.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Not quite as glamorized as they make it in the books
right.
and movies, but Superman's there. So.
yeah, exactly. Hell yeah.
And so the fact that you could go and put yourself into, you know, these buildings, these places,
right.
the Central Park, whatever it would be,
right.
you know, it almost like you're kind of living out a
right.
little bit of these characters that you love.
Yeah, it made the reality of your fantasy real. You know, even to this day, you know, make-believe, imagination. About 4 years ago, no, longer than, about 9 years ago, somebody told me the word imagine means image in. So here I am going to school, you know, being a straight-A student. The reason why I excelled with my studies was because of this. Now, even in the 70s, you know, 70s, early 80s, when I was a school kid, you know, the misconception and the stigma of the dirty, weird kid that reads comic books. And even educators back in the day was like, don't let the kids read comics. They're going to ruin them. But the fact that I was reading every day, every night, every free moment that I could breathe, I was reading a comic book. So when it came time for me to go to school to read and study and comprehend, I was acing all the tests, but it goes deeper than that. In school, in history, I would learn about World War II, but I would come home and pick up the comic book. Captain America would take me there. In science, I would learn about the galaxy and the 9 planets and the supernovas and the sun, but Galactus and the watch and the Silver Surfer would take me there. You would learn about computers and robots and stuff like that. But the Vision and Iron Man would take me there. And I always say this now, us nerds, we're humble people. We're humble. You know what I'm saying? We don't got to be first in line. We ain't got to be all up in, you know, on the magazine covers and that. But check this out. Hollywood is just catching up now with the success of the Avengers and Spider-Man on the big screen, Hollywood in the last couple of years is just catching up to where me and my nerd friends been since little kids.
That's right.
We didn't need CGI and technology and Pixar to do what they're doing in these movie theaters, because we had the comic book and we did it in our minds and our hearts. You know what I'm saying?
I remember being 12, 13, something like that, and having that first conversation with a buddy of mine, and it was many years before the first X-Men movie, but it was, hey,
right.
I hear they're going to make this X-Men movie, and I said, they can't do that. You're not ever going to be able to show, you know, Cyclops, you know,
right.
beams and Wolverine's claws. Obviously,
right.
since then, they've done that, but it's such a... What I love about comics is it's a story that I can just dive right into.
Right.
Even now, and it sounds like you're the same way, that just it fully envelops me. I read novels too, and I can use my imagination, but when I've got the pictures there, I feel like I can, you know, fly through space. I don't float, but I
of
fly
course.
Through space.
Yeah, yeah. It did, like I said, it really empowered you.
Absolutely. And
and educated you.
And speaking of the education point, you know, from going back to, you know, when you were young, when I was young, and the educators tried to steer us away from that, now,
yes, they did.
Now they have comic book courses in
yep.
college. I've got an English teacher friend of mine who has used Watchmen, of all books, to illustrate, you know, just that type of storytelling. So
yeah, that's deep. That's really good. I mean, you know, speaking on the X-Men, it was all about discrimination, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, tension, racial tension, you know, the mutants, you know, it was like, you know, all these social issues comic books is able to explain, you know what I'm saying, in an emotional in a constructive presentation about the lives that we do live in. You know, people would always say, yo, Run-DMC, you guys was like our superheroes, but there was always something different about DMC. And now that I revealed that, yeah, I come from the comic books. I'm a comic book kid first, and now when people go back and listen to my lyrics, I tell people, almost every rhyme, every incredible record that I made, I would do this. I would hear a beat, and I would go, okay, what would the Hulk do on this one? What would Spider-Man do on this one? What would Thor do to this one? Like, even on King of Rock, my first record came out in 83. My first two singles came out in 83 and 84. Our first album was 84, the Run-DMC self-titled. Then my second album was The King of Rock, on King of Rock. And people is like going crazy over this now. When Run knew he wanted to be the best rapper, he wanted to be that character that you saw in the movie Crush Groove. You know, he was Raunchy Run.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be famous, and I'm going to be special, and I'm going to be rich, and this hip-hop thing is going to make me great. When Run says on King of Rock, he wanted to be DJ Run, one of the best DJs, he said, I'm DJ Run, I could scratch. I didn't go, I'm DMC, I could rap. I say, I'm DMC, I could draw. I was still drawing in 85. In 1986, when we put out Raising Hell, I really had to put my pencil down because my life was so busy. But up until that point, everything that I did as an entertainer came from the comic books. The comic gave me the courage to get on stage in front of y'all, because they... Marvel. Remember Marvel all of this. It was the Amazing Spider-Man, the Incredible Hulk. So it was always the description and in the name of the superhero, Mighty Thor. I became the devastating mind controller DMC, the micro master DMC. So when you listen to King of Rock, when you listen to Rockbox, when you listen to Hit Run, when you listen to Forever, when you listen to them, here we go, ba-bump, I was always the mild-mannered character being transformed into this microphone, the mighty King of Rock guy. They didn't have comic books. When Run said, I'm putting you in my group, I would have named my house. Because remember, for school, back home to my comic books. Hip-hop thing came over the bridge. I was able to take the whole blueprint of becoming something mighty and powerful and apply it to my writing.
Let's go back to how you were acquiring comics. I know the first ones were coming in from your older brother. At what point did you start to go after them yourself and find them in a store, or be at a convenience store or a grocery store?
By the time I was like 8 years old, I would save my allowance. I remember very clearly getting $4 a week for my allowance. My father would give me 2, my mother would give me 2, sometimes my mom would give me 3. So I had $5. You know what I'm saying? The comic books at that time in those early years was 25, then it went up to 27, then it went up to 35 cents. So I was, and it was crazy too, because, you know, me and my, we was getting the Spider-Man, the Hulks, and all of that. I started collecting a lot of the Hulks myself. My brother, he was more into Avengers, Thor, X-Men, and Silver Surfer. I was a Spider-Man, Iron Man, Hulk, Avengers. And a lot of people don't remember this. There was a group called the Defenders on Marvel.
That's right.
Remember? Those was one of my favorite. And then also, a little bit later, though, one of my favorite comic books became Deathlok the Destroyer. And just because I was also at the comic book time, remember, around that era, comic books, kung fu movies, you know, preferably Bruce Lee movies, but at the same time, if you was into comic books, you was into the old Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney Jr., Wolfman, and Godzilla and all of that. The Marvel Universe created Werewolf. Remember Werewolf? And I would buy Werewolf because I was a big fan of those 1940 Lon Chaney, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman and all of that.
The Universal Marvel monsters, right?
Yeah, remember that? Mm-hmm. You know, Abbott and Costello. Remember every Sunday you would wait for Abbott and Costello to come on, and Abbott and Costello meets Dracula and Wolfman. Well, what I used to do on Sunday was I go to the 5 and 10 store candy store, get all my comic books, then I would come home, sit there, watch Abbott and Costello, watch Godzilla reruns. But I started buying my own comic books heavily about 8 or 9 years old.
Was there ever a time, I know you've met Kevin Smith, obviously, being on his TV show.
Yes, I met Kev a couple of times. He's a huge Run DMC fan. He said if he had to go to a desert island and only could take one album, he said he's taking Run DMC's greatest hits. I was like, wow. Out of everything on the face of the earth?
That shows your lasting imprint.
Right.
But I know that he said that, you know, there was a time he got away from comics, you know, high school, things like that, when you know, he's trying to get girls and look cooler.
Right.
Was there ever a time that you put the comics down, or did you always just feed that need, you know, to dive into that universe?
Well, probably 1986 was when I stopped drawing and buying comic books. And then it was 86, 87, 88, my whole little Run DMC. When we put Raising Hell out, my whole life had changed. But creatively, it was still there. Because, I mean, publicists and writers used to write. They used to write. And I, you know, I wasn't really still paying attention to it, but they used to write. It's amazing to see mild-mannered Daryl McDaniels transform into the mighty king of rock. So without seeing it, and without me still, you know, without me showing them at every interview and telling you what I'm telling you at every interview, mm-hmm. what comics did to me from the age of 5 to 12 years old became part of my existence. That's what I'm saying. Is it really fantasy? About 9 or 10 years ago, Chris Rock said this. Rolling Stone did an interview where they just asked everybody, what's the big deal with Run DMC? And writers and musicians, rappers, critics, they all gave, you know, what made Run DMC so cool. But Chris Rock said, yo, Run and Jay were cool, but DMC was my superhero. He said the way he looked, the way he sounded, the way he talked, and his delivery. And my joke was, oh, my God, I've been discovered. But everything that was in comic books really became a part of my life, especially now when you know, I sat down and Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez and Riggs Morales, my two editors in chief for the DMC graphic novel comic book, when I sat down with them and they convinced me to do this, they were saying stuff that I didn't notice that was really parallel to all the superheroes, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man. First of all, they said, you're DMC. You're like Superman because you wear glasses. You're like a superhero because you have an alter ego. You're Daryl McDaniels, but you're also the mighty king of rock. Then they hit me with this. When I found out that I was adopted at age 35 and didn't even know my whole life, that was a huge revelation to me. They said, D, don't you know mostly all the superheroes are adopted? Superman came from somewhere else, was adopted. Spider-Man was adopted by Aunt May. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Captain Marvel. And I was like, oh, my God. And people say, yo, DMC, you my superhero with this hip-hop thing. Everything that was given to me through the comic books as a kid, which gave me confidence as a person, is really relevant to my real existence. Now, that's crazy.
It's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
In that, now, when you say what Chris Rock said about you in Rolling Stone about how you were his superhero, did that plant a seed in your mind to pursue writing a comic, or did that come later?
No, that came later. What happened with that is, now let's go back to where, you know, we put out our first album, we put out our second album, King of Rock, and King of Rock said, I'm DMC, I could draw. It was so innocent and sincere for me saying that, but I was serious. I didn't care nothing about rapping. Rapping was just like writing an essay in English class. What I loved was drawing, and what I loved was the Hulk, and what I loved was Captain America, and what I loved was Spider-Man. The hip-hop thing was just like playtime to me. But let's go back to my first record. When I made my first record and I started to leave Queens, New York, to go around America doing shows, everywhere I would go in the first, you know, 2 years of my life, 84, 85, people would come up to me. Yo, D, I got this idea for this hip-hop comic book. 86, 87, 88. Yo, D, I got this idea for this hip-hop comic book. When I would go to Asia, when I would go over to Japan and Singapore, yo, D, I got this idea for this hip-hop comic book. When I would go to Europe, when I would go to Dublin, when I would go to Russia, everywhere that I went, people was coming up to me saying, I got this idea for this hip-hop comic book. Now, fast forward. About a year ago, a year before I started, was convinced by Edgardo and Riggs Morales to do my book, it happened to me again. So now I'm starting to pay attention a little bit because, you know, I saw, you know, when Def Jam did the hip-hop calendar and turned their roster of rappers into comic books and the Wu-Tang affiliation, and there was little seeds of hip-hop trying to utilize, you know, the presence of comic book culture in their lives. And there was a lot of good art out there. There was a lot of good stories. There was a lot of good, you know, there was a lot of good stuff there. But a year prior to me doing my venture, I said, why does it always keep failing? So when I went into the meeting with Riggs and them, Riggs had asked me, did you ever think about doing it? And because of the lack of integrity, the lack of true representation of the culture as a whole, I was like, nah, Riggs, I never thought about it. And he said, why not? Because I said, I don't want to disrespect, I don't want to pollute, I don't want to make a joke out of comic book culture. And that's not coming from DMC. This was coming from Daryl saying, this ain't no joke. This is my life. This is real. You know, this whole geek nerd thing is something that you cannot be down with if you're not down with it. You know what I'm saying? And Riggs basically said, D, don't do the comic book. And no, it's great that you're DMC and you love comic books and you can draw and you love pop culture and all of that. He said, don't do the comic book as DMC, the famous guy that's doing a comic book. He said, take it deeper to the source. He says, do it as Daryl, the little boy that loves comic books. See, that's eternal. That's not oh, I'm going to do comic books because I'm a grown man and I'm famous now and I can go do ventures. I'm going to do a comic book because, no, this isn't DMC at 50 doing a comic book. This is that little eternal boy, Daryl, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
doing this comic book because I am that. But I had never, ever thought about doing my own. There was a couple of times I would draw stuff and people would say, D, you can really draw. You should do a comic book. But because I looked at the failure of labeling your comic book, what I noticed is a lot of the ventures coming from my generation of the so-called hip-hop culture, they ruined themselves as soon as they said, I got a hip-hop comic book. To be successful, you make a comic book. If you happen to be hip-hop, maybe those elements will show up there anyway. Like, for example, if I'm Italian and I'm a writer or an anchor or a penciler or an artist, and you sign me to your publication, you don't say, this is an Italian comic book, right?
Right.
It's a comic book.
So right.
Hip-hop was disrespecting not only the culture, but the reality of what it is. Just because I'm hip-hop, I'm not making a hip-hop comic book. You got to make a comic book first. And one of the reasons that I also wanted to do it, I didn't want to do it as a DMC vehicle. The comic book itself has to be a tribute and celebration of comic book culture. So up until then, I didn't see nothing authentic from that point of view to be something long-lasting. Like, you know, there was little seeds dropped here and there, but that was just for promotional or financial. You know what I'm saying? Nobody did it. I want the DMC comic book to be spoken in the same words 100, 1,000, 1,000,000 years from now when you say Spider-Man, Hulk, Superman, and Batman. I'm not doing it from the point of, here's a hip-hop comic book to big up my culture. No. Inside the comic book, you'll have hip-hop elements because that's damn near my religion. But you will also see the whole global society as it is. You know, the same thing I did with my music, I want to do with this comic book. But to answer your question, that's why I never thought of doing one, even though at the time I was wicked with the pen. You know, I'm sure I could have pulled out some of those abilities that made me such a good student to get, you know, to ink my, to totally murder my essays in English and in writing and all of that.
Sounds like the comic, which, by the way, titled appropriately DMC, it comes from a very pure place. When you bring up that 7-8-year-old, you know, who first got the comics and got the love of it and is bringing some of the influences, some of the perhaps experiences of Daryl McDaniels as he goes on through his life.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the story itself? What plot synopsis? I mean, what can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the comic is actually totally parallel to my life. Daryl McDaniels, this kid from Queens, you know, great student, but the difference is, instead of being blessed in this universe here, me and you on this phone, my superpower is hip-hop and rock and roll, and rocking this mic. But in that other universe, the same kid, Daryl McDaniels, my old man, a Catholic school kid from Hollis, Queens, New York, I never grow up in Meat Run, I never become a rapper, I make it to St. John's University, and I become a teacher. Along my way of growing up, just like I discovered, man, I could rock a rhyme. I could write a rhyme and this and that. I start noticing I have special abilities. And when I get to a point in my life, I find out I have to use these special abilities to save and make the world a better place to live in. So it's actually Daryl McDaniels, but the only difference is I never become a rapper. It's not DMC the rapping superhero, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Daryl McDaniels grows up, I never meet Run, but I discover that I'm gifted with superpowers. Now, here's another thing. In this universe that you're introduced into, I'm not going to bore you with 1,000 issues of just the boring-ass DMC superhero. my place in this universe is I happen to be the first superhero introduced to you in the universe. There's other superheroes, there's other villains. By issue 18 or 19, you might not even like me no more. You might fall in love with the villain. You might fall in love with the other superhero. You might fall in love with the female superhero. Who knows what it is? But it's Daryl McDaniels, DMC, not the rapper, but the superhero in 80s like universe. When you look at the universe that we put it in, sure, it's like the 80s. It's trains, it's graffiti. You know what I'm saying? It's the rough edges of town, and then, you know, it's no condos, and it's no more. You know, when you go outside in any cities now, you got these skyscrapers and condos, and everywhere that was once crummy don't it look like it did in the 80s. But the question for my universe is this. It's an 80s-like universe, but is it the 80s? Because it could be the future. It could be where we're headed back to. But in this universe, there is hip-hop. The kids are doing hip-hop and pulling out the cardboard, and the kids are writing on the wall. But also, you see the punk rockers. You see the Metallica heads. You see the heavy metal dudes. You see Basquiat. You see Keith Haring. You know what I'm saying? You see Madonna. You see Michael Jackson. You see Lou Reed. So you see the reason why we picked the 80s, not just because I'm from the 80s, and the 80s was one of the most creatively visual, intellectual, musical, poetic, fashion-wise time. I don't think any generation beats the 80s. You know, 60s come very close, and 50s too. You know, Fonz and Happy Days. But we use the 80s like universe because in that time period, you didn't just have Run DMC. You had the Ramones. You had Lou Reed. Even Blondie, which was a punk group, made a rap record. So you had all these cultures and genres influencing each other. You know, you had the kids up in the Bronx. Hip hop was starting in the Bronx, but it was coming downtown to the Village. You know what I'm saying? So you had all the artists, the writers, the designers, the poets, and the journalists all together. So we chose an 80s like universe because in a universe where there's crime and there's evil and the forces of good and evil are pitted against each other every day, and you got money, and money is power, and then you got the weak people, and then you got the people deep down in the gutter banding together. There's got to be a force. There's got to be a spirit that is not taking sides. There's got to be a spirit that's not just going to fight for the rich people to protect their interests. There's going to be a spirit that's not just going to fight for the black people or the white people. There's got to be a hero that's going to fight for everybody. And like I said on King of Rock, crash through walls, come through floors, bust through ceilings and knock down doors. There's got to be a Herod who is the embodiment of the spirit of togetherness and unity and right against wrong. And that's what the DMC character represents.
That is a far more brilliant and in-depth synopsis than I could have any other future questions that I had about DMC the book. I feel like you've answered them.
Right.
You mentioned King of Rock, the song. And I want to talk to you a little bit about King of Rock, the book that you wrote back in the early 2000s, 2001, I believe.
Yes.
It's called King of Rock, Respect, Responsibility, and My Life with Run DMC.
Yep.
2001. I feel like there are a few more chapters you could add to that. Is there a plan for another?
The full book, right. You're just so funny you asked it. The book will be out next year.
That was a happy accident, I guess we'll call that one.
Yes, well, the King of Rock book that I wrote was actually the catalyst that allowed me to find out that I was adopted. And my brother, who's my mother's father's biological son, he says, D, don't you know if you never would have asked those three questions, they would have never told you. They had no idea that they didn't. First of all, they didn't know how to tell me. And second of all, they didn't tell me because they loved me, thinking the truth about who I am would just ruin me. You know what I'm saying? But how I found out was when I was doing the book, I had called my mom's up. I was like, yo, mom, I'm writing this book. I know my birthday's May 31st, 1964. But, you know, I never knew what time I was born, what hospital, how much did I weigh. So she told me those three things and hung up the phone. I love you. Bye-bye. An hour later, she calls back and goes, oh, by the way, there's something else I got to tell you about the day you was born. And I was like, okay, shoot. And this was over the telephone. She basically said, well, you was a month old when we brought you home and you're adopted, but we love you. Bye. I hung up the phone. That's how I found out.
And
so it was almost like, you know, and I could joke about it because it's almost like we can't never tell him he's Superman. But then there comes a time where he's grown and wants to question his ass. It was up to them to either reveal it to me, the truth about who I am in my existence, or hold it in and take it to the grave. So just because I asked, I think they knew that the stars had aligned and it was time to do it. And I was doing a book at a time where everybody was getting so caught up into the celebrities being made about our hip-hop culture. And when I go to middle schools and high schools, I tell the kids, yo, hip-hop didn't just create rappers. It created educators mm-hmm. and journalists and artists and designers and doctors and lawyers and CEOs. You know what I'm saying? They don't know the true representation of the very culture that they love. Hip-hop is not being ashamed to say, I read comics and I can draw, or I am a good student, or I can play the violin. You know, when hip-hop came along for me, you know, late 70s, early 80s, the Bronx and New York City, you know, everybody's conception of New York City was, it must be heaven because they got Studio 54. You know what I'm saying? Hollywood was coming to New York, and it was sex, drugs, and fur coats and all of that. And the truth about not just the young people in New York City, we was looking at our mothers and fathers, or just our mother or our father, or if he wasn't with our father and mother, our guardian, struggling to make ends meet. And hip-hop was about this. What's inside? Okay, the government don't care about you. There's poverty, crime, death, and despair everywhere. Hip-hop said, what could you do? Some of us said we like music. So some of us took that music to the park, bust the light pole open, put the wax on the turntables and turned the music up loud and had block parties. Some of us like poetry. We took that poetry and put it with that music we was playing and created hip-hop. Some of us who couldn't even read and write still said, man, when I do hear that music, I feel like spinning on my head. So on and so forth. Yo, you go to school, you become the manager. I'll go to the school, I'll become the accountant. So we all knew, in a world where it seemed like we had nothing, inside of you is something that was given to you to make your superhero existence exist on this earth. So I just wanted to write the book to explain, okay, it's cool to go showbiz, but it's like Spider-Man said, with great power comes great responsibility. The corporations that put out and market hip-hop, and a lot of the artists don't care about the audience. And that's the thing that separates Run DMC, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, KRS-One, Eric B. and Rakim, the Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Leaders of the New School, Stetsasonic, Slick Rick, Dougie Fresh, Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. All of us from the old school who are now elders, and when we speak, people get mad at hearing us speak, but we're not speaking from being 50-year-old grown men. We're speaking from the same place when we was 12 to 21 years old, when we were responsible young people trying to creatively utilize our gifts to make this world better. You know what's crazy? The lack of responsibility in the entertainment business is even worse now. But I was just writing that book, not as a preacher. You know, I wrote that book because at the time, even though I was an alcoholic, suicidal, metaphysical, spiritual wreck, I had three things going for me. I didn't OD, I didn't get shot, and I wasn't in jail. And people would always ask me, yo, DMC, you was there through it all. You was there through gangster rap. You was there with Pac and Big. You was there with Pamela. You was there with Vanilla Ice, you know. Outside of Jay's unfortunate passing, what is the secret? And my secret was everything that I did artistically was good, and it wasn't for me. It was from this perspective. When you come to a show, you're going to leave with something that's going to empower you. When you look at a video, when you listen to a record, even now, when you pick up that comic book, as good as the art is, as great as the story is, the writers and the artists that I work with are incredible. My editors and chiefs are incredible. The art is incredible. The story's fun. Yes, it's cool. But as good as it is, as good as the beat is, as good as your movie is, as good as the poetry is, as good as your dancing is, your artistic presentation is supposed to do something to those people in the audience so that they go out inspired to do something great. And that's why I originally wrote the book. And the blessing with me doing it with the comic book now is, you know, when I wrote the book, it was cool. For all the people that read it, they was like, yo, D, I was blown away by the book, but I still have some questions. Now that I found out that, you know, I was adopted, then I found out that I was a foster kid, then I found out that my life didn't begin in Hollis, Queens, New York. It began in Harlem. Then I found out my birth mother and my two brothers and my sisters that I didn't know that I had while I was growing up in Hollis, Queens. They were right next door in Staten Island. And as unfortunate as all of this is, as unfortunate as a lot of scenarios is in every major city, every inner city, every ghetto here in England, Japan, Russia, whatever, whatever, one thing that I knew when I got in my group Run DMC is even in the dirt poor ghetto, there is some good. And when I wrote that book, that's what I wanted to explain, and especially to all my other powerful peers and contemporaries. We have so much power right now, but nobody is taking the responsible route of embracing that responsibility. When I do interviews now, I say this, all rappers now are punks. And they go, why are you saying that, D? They punks and they sissies and they, because they don't do what we used to do as young people. I'm talking about when we're 18, 19, and 20. We always knew there's a microphone in front of us. We on TV. We're doing records. You're not just going to hear me, yo, yo, what's up, man? My album's coming out next week, and look at my car, and I got money in the bank, and this and that. No, I'm going to say something empowering, like on DMC. I'm the baddest. Look, I tell kids, I'm not just a rapper. I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. All these other sucker MCs are lowlifes to me. But when I get on a mic, I don't brag about my fame and fortune. I say powerful things like I'm DMC and the place to be. I go to St. John's University. And since kindergarten, I acquired the knowledge. After 12th grade, I went straight to college. And when kids and people hear me say that, they go, the king just said it's cool to be educated. So what do? They all run and go get diplomas and try to get into universities because that's the cool thing to do. If you're running around talking about, you know, if you're running around talking about what you do in your leisure time, yeah, I have drinks and I smoke my weed, but you're making it like that's the way to go. You know what I'm saying? When you're talking about things in the entertainment business like negativity, ignorance, stupidity, and disrespect is cool, that's when I got to put my superhero suit on, pick up that mic, and check you. And what I'm saying now is, you know, I always tell kids, check my resume. Everything that I'm saying to you now with the music off, everything I'm saying in my graphic novel comic book dealing with homophobia and race issues and disrespect and the degradation of women and all of that, everything that I'm saying and all these other artistic literary outlets, I've been saying on my record since I was 18 years old. So that's the whole thing. The book was just DMC without the music being on. But then when I found out all these other revelations about me, it gave me an even bigger mission to realize the whole DMC thing was just a setup of what I was really supposed to do. I wasn't going to do the book until Edgardo and I wasn't going to do the graphic novel comic book until Edgardo and Riggs Morales, my editor, said, D, at first I was reluctant to do it because I was like, I don't want to disrespect, you know, us nerds and geeks. It's cool. We all good. We happy. We got our comic books. Hollywood is trying to eat off us with all these movies, but it's cool as long as they do it good, because if they mess it up, we're gonna start picking at them and shut down Sony and all of these guys. But Edgardo and Rick said to me, D, he said, what happened when you, with your two boys, Run and Jay, took hip-hop and put it with rock and roll? Y'all did Rock Box, King of Rock, then y'all got with Aerosmith, and y'all did Walk This Way. Walk This Way didn't just change music. It changed when Steven Tyler took that mic stand and knocked down that wall. That really happened in our world. separation of white and black people, brought the punk rock kids with the black ghetto hip-hop rappers. Something good, right? I was like, yeah. He said, what happened when you, along with your two friends, Run and Jay, took hip-hop and put it with sneaker culture? You made a record about your sneakers. First, you know, non-athletic entity to get an endorsement from an athletic apparel company. Started to launch sneaker culture. Brought hip-hop fashion to the forefront. Something good, right? He said, the only thing that can happen if DMC, the little boy that did comic books, did a comic book, not just to sell comic books and be rich and famous, something good would happen for the people. That's why I do these books.
One thing that it's just a guess, but I foresee it, is you're always going to be doing something creative. I understand you're set to release another album here in what, a month or so?
Yes. First single off the new album. I'm working on two projects. I'm working on a heavy metal collaboration album with Rob Dukes, who formerly was singing with Exodus, and his new band, Generation Kill. And Generation Kill was working on an album. I was working on an album. They came along to produce a record for my album. That meeting turned into a full-length DMC Generation Kill collaboration heavy metal album dealing with substance abuse, alcoholism, identity, prostitution, political issues, social issues. We even did a song about relationships with Run DMC. You know, as Run DMC, I never made girl relationship records, and that's one project. The first single off that record will drop. I'm trying to drop on my birthday. But before that, I was working on a DMC solo album, which I consider like It's Tricky and Walk This Way on steroids. And what I mean by that was when we did, Rock Box King of Rock and Walk This Way, we kind of created this rap rock genre, you know, which gave birth to Korn and Limp Bizkit and Rage Against the Machine. Kid Rock even said, yo, Run DMC and Aerosmith had a baby and I popped out. But one thing I never did with Run DMC when Jay was alive was pursue directly the so-called genre that, you know, we didn't create it, but the so-called genre that we created. So I was working on an album, you know, I got a record with Rome from Sublime. I got two or three records with Tim Armstrong from Rancid. I got a record with Rob Dukes and Generation Kill. I got a song with me, Travis Barker, Mick Mars from Motley Crue, and Sebastian Bach together. I'm getting ready to record with Disturbed. And for my hip-hop heads, I'm going to do a song with Freddie Fox, a.k.a. Bumpy Knuckles, DJ Premier. My 30 years of hip-hop, I never worked with DJ Premier. So what I'm doing is working with artists and musicians that I never worked with, but it's all going to be live. Live drums, live guitar, live DJ scratch, and live bass and everything. So that's coming very, very soon.
And then DMC number one, of course, is available. I am having a heck of a time trying to find it. I've got it on order. Well, I'm supposed to be having it within the week in my hands.
Wow. I guess that's a good thing, because when we put them out, I think we put out 2,000, and they all sold out, which is good. You know what I'm saying? Which is like for an unknown startup self-published entity, which is really good. But the feedback I've been getting on it is, and it's beautiful, very well done. Very well done. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to create something that is a representation of all the lovers of comic books. But even more importantly, we also created this publication for this reason, to give all writers, anchors, pencilers, artists, anybody that ever wanted to do anything with a comic book, the past, you know, I'm 50. So there's guys 55 to 60 years old who should have drew for Marvel and DC that never got a chance. We're going to give them a chance. There's a multitude of artists who are, you know, under contract with DC and Marvel now, who are doing my book and acting like they never did anything in my life. I'm like, what? This man, to do this with you, this is so much fun. But I said, you've been doing this. You done got awards. And they said, no, this is different. There's artists now who need to get a chance, and there's also a lot of young people who need to get a chance. And also even deeper, there's a lot of females who need to get a chance. So we also created this to give all artists, writers, inkers, pencilers, anybody that has the editors to do anything with a comic book. That's really why I created it, so we all can have a place in the creation and the representation, even more deeply, of comic book culture. Issue 2 should be ready by September. It'll be ready by issue 2 will be ready by the by Comic Con New York October.
Perfect. And getting so many people involved, according to, and I'm going straight from the website DMC-comics.com, you've got a lot of people involved in DMC number 1, and according to the website, each chapter visualized by different teams of artists. So if you could elaborate a little bit on that, why did you opt to go that route? Was it just for the inclusion, or did you have something in mind when you planned that out?
Well, this comic book fell together organically, and we said, when we do this book, if there really was superheroes running around, and they talked to 4 people who had an experience with that superhero, their descriptions would be different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If it was me, you, my son, and my wife encountered DMC, leaving the restaurant after a night out with the girls, and you encountered him, on your lunch break, and my son encountered him coming home from work on the subway, and I encountered him, just driving down a normal block, you would have been like, no, I'm telling you, he had on black, he had on the shiny stuff, and he was glowing, and my son was like, nah, daddy, he came out, he had wings on his back. So inside the DMC universe, the little girl, Lax 6, who kind of wants to be DMC, and she's the young girl that believes, no, all these other heroes are fake. DMC's the people's hero, and she collects all the, the newspaper stuff on him. She comes into close encounters with him because he saved her life in the subway. Out of nowhere, this DMC came. Her artwork and her coloring, because of who she is, should look different from the reporters. You know what I'm saying?
So it's all based on
perspective. So having different artists draw the different interactions from whatever, from the villain's point of view, or from the newspaper point of view, or just from the Chinese guy that said, hey, get that in, what's in my house? So the beautiful thing about utilizing 4 or 5 different artists every issue, it gives a flavor and an emotional texture to each experience in each chapter, which is unique.
Yeah, it's definitely a different way of doing things. Something that, like I said, I haven't gotten mine yet. And which is funny because I talked to my brick and mortar store about it probably the week after that week that I saw you on Comic Book Men, and so that's that's how long I've had to wait. But
I know I got to tell you where your Diamond distribution is. Really, 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 really been helpful with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because they, when they met me, they met me, and they didn't just do this because it was DMC. They met my editors in chief, Edgardo and Riggs Morales, and they looked at these 3 comic book geeky nerd heads and said, yo, there's no way in the world we got to help these guys navigate the waters. Because, I guess they saw that our intentions was to do this right. You know what I'm saying? And me, DMC, I don't want no special treatment. Coming up with the chapters and the flows and the artists and right. I want people to experience everything that I experienced when I was reading my Marvel comic books.
Very faithful to your love of the genre of the medium. What is next? Now, DMC is the first book to be published by DMC, Daryl Makes Comics. So what is in the works then as the publishing house?
Well, the publishing house is definitely going to put out some kids' books. I got 2 kids' books coming, and well, I got two kids books coming in the next 2 years. We're gonna put out a kid book this year, and then we're gonna put out another kids book the following year. So we're gonna be putting out kids books, and we're gonna be putting out more of the DMC graphic novel series, and also the graphic novel series. Once we get deep enough, there's gonna be spinoffs. You know, we're trying to do exactly what we, you know, Marvel did, the superheroes, you know, 4 and 5 superheroes that we introduced to you in the, you know, the first couple of issues of the DMC Universe will be getting their own imprints and all of that stuff. But DMC's publishing company, I'm definitely really, really, really going to get into it with the kids' books.
That brings up something that...
One more thing I want to add is with the kids' books, I'm going to be working directly with educators and teachers.
That is something that I don't know if you've heard of the Comic Book Project.
What is that?
It is actually based in New York, and what they do is it's like an after school program for the kids, and they help them, you know.
Oh, I heard about that. I think I met the guy.
I met somebody
from that.
I had a chance to interview Michael Bitz last year, who founded that Comic Book Project, and it just seems like it for me again. Outside, you know, spectator outside looking in, yeah. It seems like a perfect avenue, you know, to get those kids, you know. That
of course.
Just
of course, it is. They're going to have huge success with that. I got to go get involved with that.
There you go.
Because I'm DMC, I rock mics and I make comic books. I'm a kid myself.
You heard it here first, folks. Nerds United DMC is going to go investigate the Comic Book Project.
Brilliant.
I can't thank you enough again. Without gushing, you know, but thank you so much for your time. And
I
really enjoy. I learned so much, and I can't wait to hopefully. When number 2 drops, maybe later this year, we'll get a chance.
You got it. No, you got me, man. I'm your buddy now. You're not a fan no more. You're a friend. I call them friends. I don't call them fans. Together in arms, we all stand. I'm in a gang that we call a band because I'm a superhero like Superman.
I was hoping that you could drop some rhymes for me. I know you did it on Comic Book Men, and you went up against Ming.
Oh, the freestyle, when I battled Ming.
Yeah.
All right, I'll leave you with a rhyme like this. like I said, the DMC single, it's called Fired Up, produced by Bumblefoot. Bumblefoot is one of the greatest guitar gods. I really believe he's a guitar god, like really a god. Bumblefoot produced Fired Up featuring Rob Dukes and Generation Kill. That's going to drop on my birthday in the 2 full-length albums, Generation DMC featuring Rob Dukes and Generation Kill, and the DMC King of Rock Returns albums. That's the tentative working title, but check out Fired Up. Nerds United, this is the place to be. I feel honored and privileged to come kick it with you. You got a friend in me. I'll definitely come back, and I'm going to leave y'all with this little rhyme. And here's your little drop. Yo, this is DMC and a place to be, and the only place for me to be. I'm a super nerdy, geeky dude, is right here with the one and only Nerds United. Like Luke Cage, I'm a hero for hire, raised in the age of the vinyl record buyer. They came to burn my kingdom, so they all brought fire. When that didn't work, they called me a liar. To tell you the truth, my kingdom can't be burnt. And on that day, that is something they learned. Immortality, see, it has to be earned. Bitten by a vampire, but I couldn't be turned. B-boys breaking while I rock this mic. So damn amazing, watch them all take fight. For this little generation, here's a little insight. Rappers nowadays can't rhyme or write. They need to learn a lesson from Lauren or Light and Queen Latifah. Watch them recite. If you disrespect my women, there is going to be a fight. A lot of fake rappers is dying tonight. DMC and the place to be, and Nerds United is the place for me. Ruh.
Drop mic. That's it.
Yeah, slam the mic down after that.
D, again, thank you so much. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Nerds United, episode 44, DMC. Daryl McDaniels, I can't call him DMC now. He's just D to me.
Yeah, just call me D for sure.
That's it. All right.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.